The Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Glory to you, O Lord. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, God forbid it, Lord. This must never happen to you. But Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. Then Jesus told his disciples, if any wish to come after me, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels and the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly, I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his dominion. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Let's be seated. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen. One afternoon, some years ago, I stepped out the door of the church I was serving in the old city of Jerusalem, and there was someone sitting there on the front steps, and it was Mr. Nasiba, who is actually the Muslim key keeper of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in the old city. And he was not supposed to be sitting on the steps of my church, because he was the key keeper of the most important church for Christianity. So I was surprised to see him. And I said, what are you doing here? And he said, Sister Wenanti, where have you been? You haven't been coming to my church. And then after the standard greetings and a kiss on the cheek and a little more scolding from a Muslim, he said, you haven't been praying in the church. Okay, that's true. But then he said he was coming to ask about my family because he knew that my family lived in Texas. And at that time, there was a hurricane that was hitting Houston. And he wanted to know how they were. And I said, it's okay. They are fine. Actually, they moved to Ohio. But also that we were praying for the people in Houston. And then he grabbed my arm and gave me a serious look and said, you know that this storm is from God, right? I said, okay. And then he said, yes, this is what happens when people think they are bigger than God, and Texans think they are bigger than everything. And I said, as a former Texan, I found this funny. But as a Christian and as a pastor, I found it disturbing. Because as he walked away, I was thinking about how there are so many people who would not understand that that was a joke. There are so many who would think that that was not just funny, but is the truth. Whenever horrible natural disasters occur, pastors, politicians, and armchair theologians try to make sense of all these things that are happening. How could this happen? Why were so many people hurt and displaced and killed? And what did Houston do to deserve this disaster? We might ask this same thing about disasters today in Nepal or China or Venezuela or California or many other places. We would love an explanation for these horrors. When that hurricane hit Houston, Texas, years ago, there was a politician who tweeted, I don't believe that Hurricane Harvey is God's punishment for Houston electing a lesbian mayor, but that is a little bit more credible than climate change. Yeah. Now, I suppose we could give this person credit for letting God off the hook. Maybe. But the problem with that message is that it works. It works. It works precisely because there are so many of us who actually would believe that God would send a hurricane to teach people a lesson. We have books, we have movies, we have far too many preachers who perpetuate this idea that this is how God works, right? That the creator of the universe, our beautiful universe, deals out like cards, cancer and disability and war and mudslides and hurricanes, so that we all might have the opportunity to learn a lesson or to increase our faith. And sometimes people will say, when that happens to them, well, I guess this is just the cross that I have to bear. And that breaks my heart to see that people are standing in the ruins of their homes or sitting in chemo wards and are thinking that God is dealing this out for me because I have something I need to learn. I think that also breaks the heart of God. I want to say really clearly, God didn't give Nepal a mudslide because those people needed an attitude adjustment. There might be some other reasons why an iceberg came off a mountain and drowned those people. And I want to say also, Dolly Parton didn't die because she supported trans people and had gay friends, no matter what you heard. That's not how God works. Amen. And again, your flooded house, your cancer diagnosis, your depression, your abusive relationship, whatever it is you're going through today, they are not the cross that Jesus asks you to carry. That is not the cross you are asked to carry, because that's not how discipleship works. I want to say this as often as possible because I so often hear people say to me, well, I guess this is just my cross. I guess this is the cross I have to bear. And while it might be accurate to describe situations you're going through as burdens and trials and, yes, opportunities to for spiritual growth, to re-examine your relationship to God, that is true. But those sufferings are not the cross that Jesus asks us to bear. The cross of discipleship is voluntary. The cross of discipleship is when Jesus says, follow me. Take up your cross and follow me. And that has nothing to do with landslides or anything else in the world. As Jesus prepared the disciples for the next step in the journey, he told them the truth. He said, listen, if you're going to follow me, if you're going to follow me, you probably are going to face struggle and suffering and maybe public humiliation. But you know what he didn't say? He didn't say, hey, Andrew, this is your cross. And Philip, here's yours. And Peter, here's yours. And Peter, yours is especially big because, after all, you're the rock and you can handle it. That's not what he said. What he did say was, I'm going to Jerusalem and things are going to get tough. And if you want to come with me, if you want to join me, if you want to feed people, if you want to love people, if you want to forgive people, if you want to be with people in the worst times of their life, probably people are not going to like that because it messes up their image of the world, their idea of the world. Jesus voluntarily took upon his shoulders the ultimate tool of public disgrace and political disgrace and violence. And that became his identifying mark. We wear crosses around our neck, don't we? For what he did for us. But he transformed that cross from a symbol of death into a symbol of life and liberation. And therefore, his invitation to us is to join him, in this subversive effort of life over death. I think what Jesus asks us to consider every day is this question: in the context in which I find myself today, in my context, where do I see the powers and principalities working against God's kingdom and the gospel of love? Where do I see it? And who is suffering as a result? And once we ask that question, and when we really are open to hearing the answers, therefore, then we can understand the cross that we are asked to carry and to pick up. God didn't give it to us. God invited us. Jesus invites us to be part of it. I think I've probably told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again. The bishop that I worked with in Palestine, Bishop Munib, always liked to tell the story. And he often said, oh, it's from the Arab fathers. It's from, you know, the history, the Arab literature. I'm pretty sure that it came from a church father named Munib. I think it was his story. But I told it in this way when I was writing sermons for him. And he talked about how there was a man who had a dream. And in his dream, he said, oh, Jesus, my cross is too heavy. Please let me have a different cross. And then an angel came and said, okay, you can choose the cross that you want. And so there was a room full of crosses. Your prayers have been answered. And so the man went to the first cross. It was made of iron. And he said, well, I can't carry it. It's too heavy. And then the angel said, okay, what about this one? It's silver. And he said, well, this is better, but I like gold better than silver. And so then he went to the next one, and the next one was gold. And he said, well, I really like white gold better than yellow gold. And then the next one was made of wood, but that one was too large to lift. And besides, it put some splinters in his shoulders. And on the man went, picking up and carrying all the crosses in the room, unable to decide. Finally, the man said to the angel, well, you know, after all, maybe I'll just choose the cross that Jesus gave me in the first place. Now, I sort of feel about this story the way I feel about my friend Mr. Nasebas' Texas joke. Like, that's not how God works. I don't think that's how God works, but also there's some truth there. There's a bit of truth in the fact that the cross of discipleship, the cross of Christian discipleship, comes in many shapes and sizes, and we don't often get to choose what it is that we are going to carry in our lives. It could look like being a frontline medical worker during a pandemic, or it could look like the exhaustion of a nurse on the chemo ward, or it could look like the exhaustion of the patient and the families who are coming to the chemo ward. It could look like the people across the street from me at the Cambridge Common. Is that what it's called? The nursing home across the street. Who every day at 4 p.m. come out with walkers and wheelchairs and their signs and say, it is your turn to vote. I love that. Yesterday they said it. It said, your turn. And I thought, yeah, amen. The cross of discipleship looks like an invitation. It's not something that's put upon us. It's an invitation from Jesus to take up and follow. And we don't know what it's going to look like. And we don't know how long we will have to carry it. Ultimately, we choose, though, to follow. We choose to follow Jesus. And the result of following is that we're going to carry some heavy stuff. And we might be ridiculed. And we might have disagreement with our family or friends. And we may carry the cross all the way to Calvary, as we know some have, who have stood up for love and justice in this world. In this time when the world is facing so many challenges and our neighbors are suffering so much, We, the church, however, have that same invitation and an opportunity for faithful discipleship. It's good for us to hear again that with God, all things are possible, for my burden is easy and my yoke is light. For those who want to save their life will lose it. But those who lose their life for my sake, for Jesus' sake, will find it. And this is how God works. This is how God discipleship works. We adore you, O Christ, and we praise you, for by your holy cross, you have redeemed the world. Amen.